This is a message from Acast.
We don't all get a good innings in life. I'm Andrew Strauss, and I lost my wife, Ruth, to cancer in 2018. One of the hardest things about an incurable cancer diagnosis is talking to your children about it. The Ruth Strauss Foundation is here to help. We support parents to prepare their children to face grief. You can help. Join in our Red for Ruth fundraising campaign. At the Ruth Strauss Foundation, we believe no family should have to face grief alone.
Women are peace builders. Women are humanitarians. Women are rights defenders. Local women activists in conflict and crisis zones around the world understand their communities and the needs of the most vulnerable groups. Women are the engines of peace, resilience, and humanitarian response across the globe, and they need and deserve the world's attention and support. The United Nations Women's Peace and Humanitarian Fund is calling on the world to meet the critical needs and support the transformational impact of local women's organizations working to build a more peaceful and gender-equal world for everyone. Join us today to accelerate funding, amplify the voices, unlock the power, and scale up the impact of women who are responding to crisis and building a lasting peace for all. Learn how you can join the United Nations to support women on the front lines today at wphfund.org/investinwomen.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. If it's your first time listening, Dig Deep is our bi-weekly episode where myself and Leanne ask each other a series of questions to quite literally dig deep into our sisterhood. So we hope that you enjoy this episode. And if you don't, we don't care. No, I'm joking. Make sure that if you are enjoying this episode, you like, share, subscribe, and send it to one of your friends too.
Can I just say how much I enjoy these episodes? Oh. Like, recording every week is not necessarily... It's time consuming and it's, you know, it takes time to prepare our episodes and do all of that. But like, once we jump on, I immediately feel like it's very cathartic to just kind of like, come on and one, get to know things about you that I might not have known before, or recognize how well I actually know you or how well we actually know each other. So yeah, just.
No, it's true. Because when we recorded last week, and we was talking and I feel like we was both having a bad day. And we were both just like, you know, if we didn't have to do this today, we would not be doing anything at all. And then when we finished, we was like, fuck, I'm actually in quite a good mood. Like, I love this. So yeah, exactly. That's how we feel recording. So I hope you guys feel like that listening, because it really does make me feel lighter. And the Dig Deep episodes in particular, for me, kind of feel like therapy, because I feel like sometimes we have sessions and I'm realizing stuff about myself, or like, realizing stuff about you that's new, or you that maybe I didn't quite understand. Like, do you remember when I said I was talking to you and I was like, this was in a recent episode as well, I said something to you like, oh, because you think X and X about me, and you was like, no, I don't. And I was like, oh well, maybe okay, I just thought you did that, like, yeah, you don't. So yeah, I really do love Dig Deep episodes for that. But how are you feeling today?
Yeah, today's a busy day. It is, there's a lot going on today, but you know, I've, over the past several weeks, it's been really nice for me to really celebrate the men in my life. Like, I've had a couple of birthdays, Of some really good friends of mine. It was Father's Day a couple of weeks ago, more than a couple of weeks ago.
How do you find Father's Day?
Well, my husband is a daddy, and so I, you know, want to celebrate him. And it's funny, I don't necessarily think about my own parents on like the big days, like Mother's Day, Father's Day. I think about them at like the triggers for me are like Christmas time, my wedding, their birthdays, the days that they actually passed. So Father's Day for me is actually okay. Like, I actually quite revel in celebrating all of the men that I know. I've realized in my life that, like, I know a lot of good dads, like a lot of good dads. And it's such a shift in, I see a shift in how my generation is parenting, like, and how hands-on the men are and how invested they are in their daughters and their sons. A lot of them have daughters. So actually it's quite nice for me to celebrate Father's Day and to celebrate the men in my life that are my friends. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's quite busy. Mine's kind of busy today as well, but it's not busy. Like, it's just busy. Like, is mine busy? Mine's kind of busy as well, but it's also chilled. I'm going to end it with a pamper session. So I'm looking forward to that. Ooh. Yeah. And you know, I'm just, you know, like in, you know, like sometimes when you have like a holiday coming up, the weeks before that always feel really intense and really busy because for some reason, if you're leaving the country for 7 days, you feel like you've got to do everything you would do in everything. Those 7 days before. And I'm not going to lie, it's a toxic relationship with travel because we don't need to do that. We can actually just resume when we come back.
I actually look forward to those moments because it gives me a new level of motivation because I know that once I get on that plane, I always say getting on a plane is the best part of a trip because nobody can contact me for however long as I'm on that plane. I never put Wi-Fi on my phone unless it's, you know, I need to. And I just like being non-contactable. It's mm-hmm. the best feeling in the world.
Well, you sleep on planes, so you can get away with that. Whereas I'm yeah. wide awake like a bitch. No,
you don't take medicine?
No,
it's a horrible question to ask.
No, no, to be honest, I'm not always wide awake. I normally sleep. It's normally, I think, probably a 50-50 split of like sleeping, being awake. It depends where I'm going and what my plans are. Like if I'm going to Antigua, I'm so excited to just land and gallivant. So because of that, I'm like sleeping to get all my energy up so that as soon as I land, I can shower, change my clothes and go and see my friends. But if I'm going somewhere new, I might sleep because we're going to land at like 10 a.m. and I want to be able to like utilize that day. So it kind of just depends really. But yeah, with that, let's get into Dig Deep.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey, lovies, a quick interruption to let you know that we are hosting our first ever retreat in Portugal next year, and we'd love for you to join us. Spaces are limited, so if you want to find out more, then check out our website, www.dopeblackwoman.co.uk.
Unapologetically Black.
Okay, so I'll start with a good vibe question today, because sometimes I'm doing bad vibes and trauma, and we're not doing that today. So what is a childhood memory that till this day still makes you smile, still makes you feel warm inside?
Oh, perfect. I have it. So when I was growing up, obviously in Jamaica, you have power outages all the time. And when light goes, as we would say, my dad would set up our front garden. So we would put all of our patio chairs into the garden themselves, and we would either lie on the ground or sit in the chairs. And obviously it would also be hot most of the time. So that, like, imagine no AC, no fan, nothing. And so we'd sit in the chairs or we'd lay out on the grass and we would listen to the radio. We would read. My siblings and I were big on reading together. So it was a way of like spending time without actually talking to each other. And then it would get dark and my dad would bring out a lamp, but we would like lie down and watch the stars and just look at the stars all night long. And in Jamaica, you can actually see the stars, which is something that I noticed when I got to the UK. You can't really see stars at nighttime.
It's just Babylon up there.
So it's actually a really nice like bonding moment I have, mm-hmm. particularly with me and my dad, but more specifically, like as a family, we would all sit outside and, you know, have a drink, or he would have a drink, and, you know, we'd just watch the stars and talk or read or listen to music. So yeah, that's my favorite childhood, one of my favorite childhood memories.
That's cute. It gives me non-sexual intimacy vibes.
Yeah, yeah, actually very, and it's funny because as fast forward to yesterday, you know, I think I told you that Barry and I've had this thing like, I want him to read more and he wants me to spend more time in the garden. So actually yesterday after work, what I did was we sat out in the garden, we both poured ourselves a drink and just kind of hung out and relaxed and, you know, watched the stars and like sat and chit-chatted. It was very, as you said, non-sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of my favorite forms of intimacy, although I do like mm-hmm. sexual intimacy as well. But anyway, it's your question.
Okay. If you could invent a new holiday, what would it be and how would we celebrate it? Global holiday, so everybody gets this day off.
So I thought of this straight away, so I'm just going to run with it. And it wasn't just a day, unfortunately, it was a month. But let me be more realistic and make it into a week. Like, you know how you have like National Mental Health Week or...
Right.
So this is going to be called Global Anti-Burnout Week. And on this week, it is illegal for you to do any work. You cannot do any work at all. And part of that week, one day, you have to immerse yourself in nature, whether it's going for a walk, going to a park to burn a spliff, you know, go swimming in a lake, whatever it is, you have to do that. I'd have 1 week of no work for nobody. Yeah, that's what I would do. I would like it to be a month, because I feel like for most people that are like high functioning, super productive all the time, within a week, you're not actually going to switch off. You probably need 2 weeks to switch off to then have 1 week to... 2 weeks to be able to switch off, to then have 1 week to be switched off, and then the following week you're thinking about the week after when you're working again. So I don't really think 1 week's enough, but I think if we had that as a routine, it would help people to actually tap in more into the power and the beauty of stillness and switching off. I think it's something that lockdown helped a lot of people to do. Like, I think after lockdown, people realized the benefits of like working from home, because they're able to be able mm-hmm. to do some more things in the week than I might do on the weekend, or like spending more time with their family. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah. And in a lot of ways, post COVID has made us busier because of that. Like, some people who are dedicated to work just end up working more. So I like this idea of a whole month. Let's not make it a week, it's a whole month.
What's something that this is not my question, but what's something what's like one thing that you What's one way that COVID changed you?
What's one way that COVID changed me? That's a good question. You know, I think we always think about this on like a macro level, and I've never thought about like how it changed me personally. Oh God. I don't know that it did. COVID, I don't want to say COVID was great, because it wasn't and it was a horrible thing. But like, obviously during lockdown, I spent a lot more time with myself, which I always do anyway. Like, I think I was well suited for COVID for lockdown specifically, because I didn't, I was able to spend more time with myself, which I love. I was still productive. I worked out. I put on weight during COVID, but that's kind of it. I would say if there was one thing, it brought to light my mistrust of the health system. So like when the vaccine came out, I mean, I was kind of like, not so sure how I feel about this. Like, I became very aware of, actually, I don't just trust the public health system blindly. Mm-hmm. And I really had to interrogate my justification for either taking it or not taking it. So maybe that. But yeah, honestly, I was really well suited for COVID and I didn't really feel impacted mentally by it in many ways. Mm-hmm. What about you? That's an interesting question.
I think COVID forced me to tackle my traumas like head on. So like COVID was when I actually started therapy for the first time. And because of that, I then done therapy again. So I think that was one of the ways that it changed me. And that's been like genuinely life changing. And then I think it also helped to like boost my confidence, because in COVID with the work that we was doing, we was more online. We was doing like a lot of like talks online. We was doing Instagram lives. And those were things that I was really like terrified of doing. So yeah, I'll say those are the two things. I think it helped me boost my confidence, and it also helped me tackle my traumas like head on, like actually do the not tackle them, because it wasn't like it was, they were amplified. It helped me, it helped me to launch my healing journey. Yeah. I would say that.
Well, this question is slightly connected.
This is me.
Oh, is it my question? Oh, no, sorry. Is it your question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I
wasn't using COVID.
That wasn't a question. Sorry. That was just an offside tangential point. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. How do you define a true friend? This is a two-part question, but I feel like if I tell you the second part, it might influence the way you're going to answer the first part.
So answer this part first. These are hard questions, by the way. Today, really digging.
Oh, sorry. Today, the shovel is out.
I define a true friend as someone who is genuine, someone who is honest but kind. So you can be honest and critical and hold me to account, but do it with love. And as a byproduct of that, someone who is non-judgmental. So again, accountable, but holding me accountable without being judgy about it. Loyal for sure. And yeah, loyal, non-judgmental, kind.
Mm-hmm.
Part I think B, those are the three main. Yeah, go ahead. Part B.
Part B is, what areas of being a true friend do you struggle with the most?
Oh, good question.
So that might not be out of the three things that you said, because obviously you can't list every bloody quality that makes you a true friend. But like when you think of what it means to be a true friend, or what it means to be a good friend, what part of that do you struggle with the most?
That's a good question. I don't know if everybody would agree with this, and actually I'm keen to hear your opinion on this.
Yes, I'm joking. I'm just joking.
But maybe, you know, you often say that like I create space for people to share. And I share, I'm an oversharer, but I'm not necessarily an emotion sharer. Does that make sense? So like,
I'll say, Leanne, how are you? You will say, my cat died, but I'm cool. Whereas I'll be like, my cat died and it made me feel like X. So it's like, you know what's going on, but you don't know how you feel about what's going on.
Yeah. And maybe part of the, I'm still struggling with figuring out what that part of it is. It's like still a shield of vulnerability that I have, or a shield against being more vulnerable. And I think it's just, but it's not necessarily that I'm afraid to share with others. It's also maybe that I'm afraid to reckon with those feelings myself. You know what I mean? So I think that's part of it. It's almost like I don't want to pour out on somebody else because I'm not ready to deal with it on my own. And I don't think, have you ever seen me cry?
Only once the other day, but that was like happy tears at the dinner. You cried at the surprise dinner.
Oh yes, so I did. Wow, that's funny. And I think I've cried on the podcast once, but maybe we weren't on camera. So it's a byproduct of that. It's like I don't want to bring my own emotions to the forefront.
So that's definitely a thing. I don't think it's a hindrance to your ability to be a good friend though, or like it's a hindrance to our friendship. one, I know this is something that you're aware of, and two, I don't think your capacity to share or not share makes me feel like I can't trust you. Whereas, like, I've got another friend. I've got another friend who's the exact same. And sometimes I'm like, I can't explain it. And maybe in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, something will come to light. And I hope it doesn't. And it makes me, like, have an answer to this. But with this particular friend, it kind of makes me feel a bit uncomfortable and a bit uneasy. Like, well, why do you never share? Like, there's something there that makes me feel a bit off-key. Whereas I don't really feel like that with you. I just feel like that's just the way you are. And I also think sometimes it's like, as someone who's on the opposite end of the spectrum, I think for my own self, I've had to like learn recently that like, or just remind myself that like everyone is so different and unique, and that's what makes us all special. Mm-hmm. And just because I might operate in this way, doesn't it make somebody else any less than or more than of a person to not operate in that way? That's just how they view the world and how they show up. So I don't necessarily think it's like a bad thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, for sure. I feel you. Okay. So question for you. Who has been the most influential person in your life and why?
Who has been the most influential person in my life and why? I think it has to go to my mum. I think it has to go to my mum in on like so many levels. I think one, my mum is like, well, right now she's slightly oppish, but my mum's been my best friend like my entire life. My mum's been my best friend my entire life, and we have an unbreakable bond. Like right now, I would love to burn her bridge because she's stressing me out, but there's not a fiber in my body that would allow me to do that. And I feel like she's someone who's always had my back, like genuinely, wholeheartedly, since I was really, really, really small. And she's always like believed in me in a way. She's always believed in me more than I could ever imagine believing in myself. Do you get what I mean? Like she's always pushed me to do better. And so in allowing her to be an inspiration for me, she's also allowed myself to be an inspiration for myself in a really weird, like, backwards way. And then I think, like, outside of that, on the flip side, I think because I am so close to my mom and because we do have a really intimate relationship where I know her outside of being a parent, I know her as a sister, I know her as a friend, I know her as a woman, I know her as a mother, but, like, not even necessarily my mom, in that I'm able to learn so much from her in a really short space of time that has helped me to make wiser decisions. So, like, a lot of my mom's mistakes, maybe, let's say, I've been fortunate enough to be privy to because she shared it to me or because I've seen it, and it then means that I don't have to then make those mistakes. So I think she's inspired me into like who I am today on a very fundamental level, but she's also inspired me because her vulnerability and openness of like decisions she's made that she maybe wish she didn't allows me to not have to make those same mistakes. And so because of that, everything I do or haven't done, a lot of it stems from my relationship with my mum and like who she is.
We love Aunt V.
She's an op.
She's the original Aunt V.
She is an op. Yeah? Op. I have to start with op. Okay. Because you said my questions are hard today. Let me find a nice one. Okay. I think this is nice. If you could achieve anything in your life with absolute certainty, what would it be and why?
This is so hard. Why are all these questions so hard today? Because immediately, okay,
what's your favorite color?
Even that feels hard to answer. It's red, I think, but maybe purple sometimes. I've been really into nudes lately. Anyway, being a successful writer, truthfully, yeah. I think right now I'm in the process of writing and journaling and doing all of that in preparation for my next book. And I'm so nervous about it because it's a departure from anything that I've written about before. And I just want it to do well, really badly. Like this is like the one thing, if I did this, I would feel like, yes, I've done it. Like, and if I never wrote another book ever again, no, I still would write more books. But yeah, I think if I could do anything with certainty and be successful at it, it would be being a writer.
Is this book more personal to like you?
Much. It's literally, quite literally about me, which feels self-indulgent, but it will land once the book comes out. I don't want to say too much in case it changes dramatically from
like, I feel like you haven't said anything. All you've ever told me you're writing a book. I'm like, okay, well, give me more. Back it out.
The book is about like the different experiences that I have been through, which I, many of which I've talked about on this podcast. So, you know, being an organ donor, caregiving for my parents, being a victim survivor, but then also like looking at that within, like, I am not the only person who has been through those things. There's a whole community of Black women who have been through those things, and kind of sharing my experience as a representation of the wider experience. That's the best way to put it.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening to the audio version of that book. I'm not going to say reading, because you know I commit to these books and I don't read them. Yeah.
Very interesting audio read, and I'm not an Audible person. Like, I prefer reading books, but I've started Tarana Burke's biography or autobiography. Yeah, about her starting the Me Too movement. And I've been listening to that on audio. And actually, the author's voice makes such a difference. Like, when somebody generic reads somebody else's book, it does not land. But actually having the author read the book themselves, I think is really helpful and useful.
Because I started reading The Psychology of Money, yeah? Because I listened, I listened to an interview with the author, Morgan Housel. And then I realized that the book's available on Audible, in the Audible version. But how can I say this? Listening to an old white man middle class read is just not that engaging for me.
No, definitely not.
And so I realized that this Audible book version, for me, it works better when the person's voice is a voice that I can maybe engage with or be a bit more familiar to. Because the book, what the person's saying, the way they read is fantastic. It's great, yeah? But I feel like I'm in a lecture. It reminds me of uni or being in a lecture. And so I keep tapping in and tapping out and having to replay.
Okay.
Whereas if I felt like I was listening to more of a familiar voice, it would probably feel a bit more like a podcast and I could just listen to it all day long. So right now, my list of books is getting longer, and I've actually just said, I don't want to add any more things onto my list of books. I don't want to read any more books. I don't want any more books. I don't want anything, because I'm not finding a happy medium. Like, when I was younger, I was a bookworm. Like, would read nonstop, yeah? Because I wanted to be a writer. Would read nonstop. My mom would be like, dinner time. I'm like, no, I need to finish this chapter. And now I'm one of those people who read a book and I've got to read the one line 55 times. It's terrible.
Is it because of what you're trying to read?
No, because I don't choose books that I don't care about. Like, you know, I love money. I love understanding money. And I also love psychology. So this book, as an example, The Psychology of Money, is like absolutely perfect. And what the book is about, like, from page one, it's interesting for me. From page one, the stories in it is really great. But I just can't. Yeah, I end up reading the page. I've read the same page 12 times. It's like, at what point do I just give up and give the book away?
I suppose. And I mean, if Audible works for you, then do the Audible, but...
No, nothing's working. Nothing.
I think sometimes it just takes, like, you just have to pound the pavement and, like, keep going and keep rereading and rereading. And eventually it gets to the point. When I've had a gap of not reading, it takes me a while to get stuck back in. But then
I think you just need to find the right book. Yeah? A bit like, you know, Sexy Time with myself, yeah? That wasn't something that I could do straight away. Like, I over planned it. It was like, get a romantic playlist, put candles on, make sure the room smells like this. It was just too much. And so me trying to have Sexy Time by myself for the first time was like, this is awkward, embarrassing, uncomfortable, and nobody can even see me. And I feel like with a book, I think I actually do need that. I think I actually need to be able to be in a position where I haven't got 101 things on my to-do list. I am able to switch off. I am able to just read this book and immerse in it. So like, maybe I'm on holiday, I'm on a beach, and I'm not going out that evening. I'm not stressed about something. Do you get what I mean? Like, I feel like I need that capacity. Or I need to try books that are fiction so that I can use it as a way to escape. Whereas I actually read a lot of books that are not fiction. They're like educational or the like self-help, which is what I'm genuinely interested in. But I think maybe the format of books isn't the most ideal for that.
Fair. I think it's about finding a niche. So I love autobiographies, and that's kind of where I get stuck in. Whereas I don't love reading fiction, and I've strayed away from it, and it takes me a long time to get through a fiction book.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to you in public?
Oh, okay. So this is not the most, but I don't know why I'm always falling over in public. Like, I'm always walking and then I stack. And the thing is, I don't actually stack to the point that I drop on the floor, but I need to so that I can sue and get a grand or £1 million very easily. But I think I have, now let me share two quick most embarrassing things. So the first one is I had on my favorite slides, they were so bloody expensive, these nice little black slides, the top bit's got little cute pearls on, doing my damn thing. I was in
Croydon,
walking like a hot girl who I was on that day, and I slipped in sick on the floor, and I was in shock that I just sat in the sick.
Oh my god.
And then
oh
after that,
oh one, my god. Oh
I couldn't
my
even
god.
Walk with those shoes on. Yeah. And then two, my foot was hurting, so I couldn't even walk properly anyway. And I remember just being fuming and so upset. And I don't think I even had the capacity to sue at that time, but I should have, because there was no slip sign and I literally was in sick. And you know how I am when it comes to cleanliness. Like, imagine me being in somebody else's sick.
I'm so sorry.
I'm even going to skip over that one, because now I'm starting to feel my body's starting to itch because it knows I hate it. The second most embarrassing thing I would say, which is the day that I was meeting you. So I told you this story before, but I haven't shared it on the pod, I don't think, which is when I was on my way to meet Leanne. We were doing a photo shoot for The Guardian. I thought I was looking cute and leng this day. Makeup done, hair done, slip back. Ooh, that's me. And I was wearing a cute little dress and I was walking to meet Leanne. And on the way there, lots of guys kept looking at me. And I was thinking, makeup on, fleek, hair slip back, that's me, and a bitch, yeah. And then I got to the platform, and if you guys know London Bridge, I was walking all the way through London Bridge. I get to the platform and a lady runs up to me and hugs me, and she's like, pull your skirt down. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, your skirt, pull it down. And I look down and my skirt is all the way up, as in the bottom part. The dress was up, like, to my hip, the dress was on my hip. And I had tights on, but ultimately you could see through. So I basically walked through London Bridge naked. And I remember that day feeling so embarrassed and mortified, but, like, happy for that lady, like, helping me. But also just thinking, all those black kings that walked past me that I thought was checking me out because I looked leng, you actually were allowing me to walk around exposed. Like, don't you have a sister? Assholes. Don't you have a cousin? Don't you have a wife? Like, didn't you think I deserve to know this?
Horrible, horrible. But the sick one is worse. The sick one is way worse.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah. Okay. We're flying through the questions today. So my next question is, what's something you're struggling with that you wish more people understood about you?
What is something that I'm struggling with?
I feel like something moves your head straight away.
No, I was like, here Roshan goes again, asking me to share my emotions.
This is called dig deep, all right? And sometimes you got to go deeper than usual. What's something that you're struggling with that you wish more people understood about you? Or it might be, what's something that you're struggling with that you haven't communicated?
Could be both. Wow, there, recently, there was someone very close to me who, you know this already, that was struggling with health issues or potential health issues. And I was very calm about it. And I was like, yep, not worried. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then great. But I was shitting bricks. One, because I was like, you know, I don't want to lose this person in my life. And two, because I was like, I may have to become a caregiver all over again. And I don't know that I have like the capacity to be able to do that. And I think every time something like this comes up, every time there's someone in my life who gets sick or who has an issue, or I feel like death or illness might be imminent, like nearby, it's triggering for me. And not triggering in a way that it makes me, triggering in almost like a little bit of a selfish way. So obviously I'm worried about that person and I don't want them to get sick, but also I'm like, fuck, I can't do this again. And so that feeling of having to go through that process, which I'm incredibly appreciative of because it taught me so many things, and it was definitely a growing and learning experience for me. I'm just like, I literally do not, like, I will fall to pieces if I have to do this again. And so, yeah, I think there is, you know, grief is a never-ending process. We've talked about this all the time, but I think because it's been so long, like my, you know, it's been 10 years now, people often think like it's in the past. It's never really in the past. Like, loss and grief is always very much a present part of your experience and your world. And so, yeah, I think that's probably something that I don't talk about, that I struggle with daily, almost. I wouldn't say daily, but often. Like, it is a regular part of my, like, mindset. Yeah.
Mm. So what did you do to, like, combat those thoughts and feelings during that time?
Just push through, you know, focus on work, try and stay positive. My thing is always about putting the other person's emotions above my own. And so instead of focusing on my own emotions, I literally just focus on trying to make sure that the other person in question feels better, or seeing what I can do for them. So it's not actually, and that's not a good piece of advice, nor is it healthy. Please don't follow
that. My next question was going to be like, do you not think you could do both?
I think it's like muscle memory. So when you're used to putting other people's feelings above your own in those circumstances, which is what I did with my parents, like I put their emotions in front of my own because they were so like discombobulated in experiencing their own emotions, and my parents became like completely different people. It was like getting strangers, getting to know them all over again, because I was seeing all these emotions come out of them that I'd never seen before. I think it's just muscle memory. It's what I'm used to doing. Like, I'm used to putting aside my feelings and either trying to fix it or trying to be there and create space for the person, dependent on what's needed. And so oftentimes it's just easier to put my own emotions aside rather than contending with them, because it's they become competing things to deal with. It's like, I have to deal with this person, but I also have to deal with my own emotions. And sometimes it's easier to do that first and then deal with myself afterwards. So, yeah.
Okay.
Should I end it on something light or something serious?
Jesus Christ.
If you could pick one sex position for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Well, it depends if that man got a long shalong.
Let's assume that it's the perfect. So whatever is ideal for you, length, girth, etc. What's the perfect position?
So
remember, that's the same position for the rest of your life. You can't switch. That's the way you're always going to have sex for the rest of your life.
This is tricky because the answer I was going to give is not my favorite position. But I think if you have a nice long shalong, this position is like amazing. So the position that I was going to choose based on that would be doggy.
Okay.
But actually, my favorite position is missionary.
I thought you would say missionary, actually.
My favorite position is missionary, on your back, legs to your shoulders. Ooh. But I just feel like, the thing is with missionary is that if it's not being hit right, my face style has to be fake.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, but you're assuming that it's the perfect situation, like everything else in play is perfect.
Being hit right, then I get shy and I'm like, oh, I'm just a damsel. I'm just a damsel. Stop. Yeah. Whereas if like doggy, whether it's good or bad, I'm not facing you. So like, the fuck. Yeah.
I can't say that I can answer that question myself either. It really is so dependent on so many different factors.
Doing doggy for the rest of your life, I think, is rude. It's like, where's the intimacy?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's why I thought you'd say missionary, because
the
face-to-face action.
It's like, where's the intimacy? And I love intimacy. But going back to what we said earlier on about non-sexual intimacy, I absolutely love that. So I feel like in my head, this is my partner. This is my husband. This is the person I'm with. If I could have amazing doggy every time we have sex, but I still was fulfilled by the non-sexual intimacy outside of that, I'd be balanced out. So it'd be fine.
Okay. Fair. We take that answer.
Yeah.
All right, folks. I think we've come to the end of this Dig Deep episode. It was lovely sharing with you. Thank you, Roshan, for making me emotionally uncomfortable. We love it.
As my trainer said to me today, nothing grows from the comfort zone. Okay?
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
This is a message from Acast.
Are you voting in the general election? Of course you are. But some of your friends might not be. So help them out. It's simple. Get your phone out, text 3 friends and ask them to vote. Whatever you're voting for in this election, whatever issues are close to your heart.
£16.50 for 2 cups of tea and a cheese toastie. What?
There's more you can do than just vote. Triple the vote. Oh, and don't forget to bring your ID July 4th.